Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey, griefsters. I hope you're having an okay week. I know it has been tough lately, and I just wanted to acknowledge that if you are dealing with grief along with everything else that is going on currently in the world, then that is a hard rucksack to have on. And so I hope that wherever you are, you have someone that can help you with that rucksack. I should also mention, while I have you, I have a book coming out next January, You Are Not Alone, and you can pre-order that now. And I'm thinking there is actually, I do talk about the rucksack thing in the book, in case you liked that. You can pre-order from wherever you want to pre-order your books from, but it makes a huge, huge difference to the authors if you do that. So I'd be very, very grateful if you've done it already. Thank you so much. This week, I'm talking to the very brilliant Emma Kennedy. Emma is an actor, a writer, an author. She's written 11 books, including The Tent, The Bucket and Me, which was turned into the BBC sitcom The Kennedys, starring Katherine Parkinson. And she has a new book out called Letters from Brenda. Brenda, in the title, is her mother, who we are talking about in this chat. And as you will hear, she is quite the character. I don't know how else to say it. The book is absolutely brilliant. I would really, really recommend it. I dived into it and finished it really quickly. It was just, yeah, quite the life and extraordinary world that Emma has managed to capture. So this is me and Emma talking about the inimitable Brenda. So, Emma, who are we remembering today?
My mother.
Your mother, Brenda. Brenda.
Who was very complicated person.
Having read your brilliant book, Letters to Brenda, complicated is the only word.
Yeah.
It's quite, I feel like, can you sum her up briefly just for the listeners? Because if they haven't read the book, I feel like you need a bit of a sense of who we're talking about here.
It was like knowing two people at the same time. Mm. There was the good Brenda, who was this brilliant, charismatic, extraordinary person who I think the best way of describing her is she was like a wild horse. Mm. And that if you walked into a field and a wild horse emerged from nowhere, you would think it was the most magical thing possible.
Yeah.
And if that wild horse came over to you and wanted to spend time with you,
wow,
it would be an experience you would never forget for the rest of your life. But a wild horse can also smash your brains in with their hooves.
Yep.
And that was bad Brenda. and bad Brenda, you know, you never knew which Brenda you were getting.
Yeah.
So it was like being around a very unpredictable wild animal.
Yeah, because I love that metaphor so much, because to wander into a field, I've seen, I'm half Welsh, so I've seen a lot of wild horses over, like, you know, on the cliffs by the sea, beautiful. But for that wild horse to, like, be in charge of getting you up for school, making you breakfast.
Well, like, I mean, but that never happened.
Yeah, because that wild horse is not, that's not on that wild horse's remit. It's not on its job description.
No. No, I mean, a wild horse is just out for itself.
Yes, doing its thing.
So, you know, there's no point in which a wild horse is going to stop what it's doing and help you pull your cart.
Yeah.
It's just simply never going to happen.
It's not aware you have a cart. That's not on its... No. Yeah.
No.
Didn't know it was there.
It's like carts are not for the wild horse.
Yeah.
No.
That's a very... I mean, yeah, the book is brilliant. And we should say... contains a series of letters that she wrote to you as you were growing up and your reflections on them. Yeah, I think it's important people understand a little bit about her character, because obviously she was an extraordinary character. So how long ago did Brenda die?
8 years.
8 years, okay.
Yeah. 8 years ago. She died on May the 18th in 2014.
So we say on the show, eight's a bit tricky, I think, because... the first five is sort of first, you know, 0 to 5 years, bit of a blur, but people kind of care. And then 5 to 10, people are like, oh, yeah, that's the thing that happened to you. But it's interesting to me. Did you only start writing the book last year? So has it taken you a while to write about her?
It has taken me a long time to write about her. And I mean, bearing in mind, I got the letters 3 years after she died.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it then took me a further 4 years to think, okay, this enough is enough. I've got to finally find out what she suffered with for all of her life. We should explain, she had an undiagnosed mental illness that was never addressed in her lifetime. And there were things that happened on the day she died that really properly damaged me, really deeply damaged me. When I found the letters, that was sort of the start of me being able to come out of that and be able to sort of look back and say, OK, those things that I found really damaging on that day, I'm starting to be able to just live with it. Because I still, to this day, there are certain things that happened on that day that I still can't talk about, and I'm not convinced I won't cry. It's extraordinary, the damage that day did to me. But the letters were the start of the pathway out. And one thing especially that they gave me was they helped me remember the good Brenda.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd been left with bad and sad. I'd been left with mad, bad and sad. That's what I'd been left with.
Not who you want to be left with at the party.
No.
Those people need to leave early.
And I'd forgotten the vivaciousness of her and the outrageousness of her and how unique she was. This is the thing, is that I will often say to people, I never knew anyone like her. I've never known anyone like her since, and I will probably never know anyone like her again. And that sort of feels like an extraordinary thing to say about your mother or about anybody, but she really was.
And I've
actually come to appreciate that more having written the book.
It's really interesting. I obviously interviewed a lot of people, and I think what you're describing is that the first few years of grief is that all you have is like the illness and the death, and it takes a long time to remember them healthy, normal. Like, and I think it's so interesting you said that those letters got gifted to you from, you know,
that the universe chose. No, you know what I mean. The universe, like, it chose to wait till 3 years.
I'm really into that all now. So yes, please, the universe sent them.
Yeah,
to
and
me.
It waited 3 years because if you'd got them straight away, you probably wouldn't have looked at them, or you might have looked at one and gone, "Oh, I know what that box is. Fine." But the fact that it waited, you do need a lot of time. And, you know, so my dad died of cancer, and it took me years to remember him not ill. Like, he was just ill in my head, even though he wasn't ill for a very long time. Yeah. And similar to, I'm terrible for relating people's stories to me. Regular listeners will know. But my dad was an extraordinary character, and I really related to what you were saying about, like, my only description is, like, you knew he was in the room. Like, the tornado of a person.
Yeah.
And some people found him just inspirational, and other people wanted to punch him instantly. Like, he was a really tricky character. And if you got him and you liked him, you got the best of him. So I really related to struggling to remember someone who is... It's very hard to describe somebody like that.
Force of nature.
And also, like, if people haven't met them, it's like, oh, how do I sum up, like, the whirlwind that I live with?
It's the energy they give off, isn't it?
Yes. And
a huge energy. And huge. Also, what do you do when the energy is gone? I mean, for me, it was complicated because I describe her as she was my, you know, the greatest light in my life, but also the heaviest burden. And that weight, when that weight has gone, you feel relief.
Yeah.
But you also feel an emptiness. Because I'm sort of fast understanding that my mother was probably the greatest muse I will ever have.
Yeah, I did think that when I was reading the book. I was like, I mean, she gave you material every single day. Like, this woman never didn't give you material. She was never just quietly in the background. No. Like, she was delivering.
And I feel like I'm now robbed of decades, of at least 2 decades worth of her becoming crazy old lady.
Oh, she would have
rather
been.
Than just, I mean, she would have been extraordinary. Yeah. She would have been an absolute pain in the ass, and I wouldn't have had a moment's peace. But, you know, that's all gone.
Yeah.
The interest, the small, intricate intrigues that she always brought are gone. But here's an interesting thing. Going back to what you were saying about your dad and just remembering the illness and the bad bits. Mm. I don't know if you've dreamt about your father since he's died. But my mum has come to me in dreams a couple of times. And here's the interesting bit. The first time I dreamt about her, she was sitting on the floor because she couldn't stand. She was weak. She looked as she did on the day she died.
Wow.
And she had a sick bowl in her hands.
Yeah.
And I asked her how she was. And she just said, well, that was quite the journey.
Wow.
And then reached for the sick bowl. So that was my first dream of her.
Wow.
But every single time I've dreamt of her, she's got steadily younger.
I love it. I love it so much. Of course she
has. So I've only dreamt of her as ill once.
Wow.
And every single time she's just got a little bit younger.
Wow.
I think the last time I dreamt about her, she was sort of in her prime.
Wow.
Of about, you know, 35, 40, looking sensational and being absolutely full of herself in my dream.
Because if you can go back to when you're in your prime, you appreciate it. You're not going, I need to lose weight, I need to do it. You're like, no, this was the greatest moment.
I am fabulous, thank you. And now here I am being fabulous in the afterlife. So that's interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And having read your book, I can fully believe that Brenda would choose and would make it happen. That she would be like, no, I'm not going to be old spirit. Thank you. I want to go back. Yeah. Thank you to this moment. I mean, it's difficult because obviously I was 15. So it's like, it's so wrapped up in like not really understanding what was going on. I did have dreams about him. My mum and brother had much more beautiful dreams. I had this dream where his dead body was in the porch. And he looked really, he had like pancreatic liver cancer, so he was very yellow. And we just kept like walking past it. Like in the dream, I kept saying to my mum, like, when are we going to move Dad? Like, we should, like, it's not, you know, people are going to think it's weird that this dead body. But everyone was like, oh, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. And that was one of my dreams. And I remember feeling so guilty that I didn't get this, like, he didn't visit me in light saying I am now at peace. No, I just got this like, but yeah, someone did say to me, well, maybe you just deal with things practically. And I thought, yeah, I do. But that's so, I'm so happy that Brenda has found her, wherever, even if it's in your subconscious, it's a lovely place. That's a really, really lovely thing to know.
A really spooky thing happened the night she died, which I didn't put in the book. Mm. And I caught the sight, kind of wish I had, but I can't really remember about the thought processes of why I didn't put it in. I think it was because it was the first chapter. I didn't want people to think I was being a bit woo-woo.
Yeah, straight away, yeah.
But the morning after my mum died, my wife, Georgie, who, and I really do have to stress this, is the single most sensible person I have ever known in my life.
Right.
She's a manager of artistes.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
She is somebody who is very calm, who is very collected, who never says anything she hasn't thought about for at least half an hour. Okay? So she's not someone who's given to making grand or wild statements. Yeah. So she woke up and I woke up and she turned to me and she said, something strange happened in the night. I woke up. And Brenda was holding me. And I looked at her and I said, I had the exact same experience.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that weird?
Like hugging you?
Yeah. Holding me from behind.
Wow.
And she had the exact same thing. And she said it first.
Oh, Emma, I'm a bit spooked.
That's like, ooh, isn't it?
That's really, that's proper. Wow. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And you both had the same dream.
Yeah, exactly the same.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I love stuff like that. I didn't really have any experiences like that, but I do also vividly remember being 15 and being scared. And if anything spooky happened, I would say out loud, don't do anything. Like, if you're here, go away. Because I thought I can't handle like seeing him or something happened. So I was very like, kind of like, clear about my boundaries, which I now feel bad about. Perhaps he wanted to say hello, but that's amazing. Oh my God. And yeah, it's always good if it's someone who's not woo-woo, isn't it? Someone who's not prone to being like, no,
if there are certain people in my life, if they'd said it, I would have literally just, you know, quietly rolled an eye and not given it a second thought. But it was the fact it was her. Yeah. She said it first and I'd had the exact same experience.
Oh my God.
What
did Brenda die of? What happened? What was the...
She had breast cancer.
She had breast cancer.
And it had spread through her body.
Yeah.
The sadness for me was she was diagnosed about 10 years before she died. And that was at a point where her illness was sort of at its peak.
Mm.
And she was really, really paranoid. Her
mental illness, to say.
Yeah, her mental illness was... And she was really paranoid. She genuinely believed that all the treatment that was being offered to her was a conspiracy between the hospital and myself and my father to kill her. And so it took what should have been, you know, once they had discovered that she had a cancerous lump, things were, that she was being treated at the Royal Marsden and they were ready to move really quickly. And it took us 3 months. Every single step, like, you know, you're going in for a biopsy today. No, I'm not going. You know, I'm not doing this. They want you to have this. No, I'm not doing it. So it was the most single stressful 6 months of my life, that period. And she refused chemotherapy. She refused to have mastectomies. And she refused to have the medicine that she was supposed to take after they'd removed the lump and she'd had a bit of radiotherapy. So those things, if she hadn't have been mentally unwell at that time and had all the things that the Royal Marsden and we were telling her or encouraging her to do, she'd probably still be alive.
That's so hard when someone is refusing treatment. That's an extraordinary...
Because she was unwell, mentally unwell.
How did you deal with that at the time? Did you just, what do you do?
It's the really interesting thing looking back is how normalised it was for me and my dad. And the best way I can describe it is it's like a form of Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah.
And because for, 40 odd years in my case, a bit longer in dad's case, it was ingrained into us that you don't mention the mental illness, you don't discuss it. You certainly wouldn't discuss it with a doctor because we never wanted Bad Brenda to appear.
Yeah.
So you spend all of your life just ensuring that Bad Brenda, you don't give Bad Brenda an excuse to come into the room.
Mm.
And I sat with my mother in an oncologist's office at the Royal Marsden and listened to her explain to him that she'd been given cancer by a CIA operative in a bookshop in Cambridge. And none of us said a word.
Yeah.
But also, we didn't bat an eyelid.
Yeah.
Because this to us was normal. This was just, mum's just being silly again.
Yeah.
But, that was serious.
Mm.
And I'm still sort of slightly surprised that the doctor who was in the room when she said that...
didn't think, hang on a minute,
yeah, there's something off here. But I wonder if he just thought, people say strange things when they've been diagnosed with cancer. She's in shock.
Yeah, yeah.
But nothing was done. Nothing. Nothing was done about it. And if something had been done about it, again, I keep coming back to it, she'd probably still be alive.
Mm.
She'd have had a very, very, very different life if what she had been recognised much earlier in her life.
Mm. Yeah, I felt that reading the book, because obviously, like you said, there's these two truths going on. Like, she's so funny and the things she does are so outrageous, and to read about them is like so enjoyable. but there's this... Yeah, like when you, like you said, because it's such a spectrum of behaviour, isn't it? So, like, there's the fun, brilliantness.
Yeah, there's the fun. And then there's me, age 10, standing at a bathroom door trying to persuade her to take the carving knife out of her hand.
Yeah.
I mean, what?
Yeah.
That was my childhood.
Well, it's not a childhood, is it?
And you just think, like, what the hell? It's like I was providing mental health support at the age of seven and up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of like I can't actually believe I'm saying it out loud. Mm. But as a child, I was constantly trying to stop my mother from killing herself.
It makes for a very complicated parent-child relationship.
Yeah,
and so of course when you get to, like you said, you're an adult and she's an adult and an oncologist is saying you need to do this and she doesn't. Like, of course you don't want to push her because like you said, that's an entire life of don't push this person. This person's not okay. This person's not safe. They're not stable. Like, we can't do that.
But she wouldn't have accepted it either. I've had long conversations with a friend of mine who's a very eminent professor of oncology. Who knew her? I was at university with him, and known her since he was 18. And again, he's another very kind, very calm person. But I completely believed him when he said to me that there was not a chance in hell that my mother would ever have submitted to a psychiatrist.
Mm, mm.
Not a chance.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
It was a big breakthrough for me when I realised that she wasn't awful, she was ill.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really important, especially for children. I mean, obviously, when I was growing up, you know, you weren't allowed to talk about it or tell anybody outside the family. And you weren't really allowed to talk about it inside the family.
Mm.
But if I had known for a single second that there was someone else who was going through what I was going through,
yeah,
and that none of this was my fault or that I was causing any of it, then it would have made a huge, huge, huge difference. But they, you know, that there's very little support for children or family members who are dealing with or living with someone who is unpredictable because of a mental health illness. I think obviously the treatment of mental health and the awareness of mental health and the stigma of mental health, all those things have improved massively.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is absolutely brilliant. But there still needs to be a support mechanism for people who are living with the person who has a mental health issue, because it's a big thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big, huge and serious thing, and it affects every aspect of your life. And that's, you know, it could be the same as if you're living with anybody who has a serious illness. It affects the entire family, there's no doubt about that. And I'm sort of careful about saying this because it's not to put a pressure on the person who has the mental health illness.
No, but it's about being honest, I think.
But people who live around those people who, especially if they're unpredictable, that was my big issue. It was that constant terror because she was so unpredictable. And she could go from sweetness and light to literally, you know, you think she was capable of murdering someone in the space of seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's how you deal with that and how you do you remove yourself from the situation. But it's also about teaching yourself how to remain calm in those instances. But I spent, I mean, all of my childhood, I was just basically terrorized. That's how I feel now looking back. I was terrorized. My 20s were angry because I resented it and I resented her and didn't fully understand her. My 30s were when we started to get on again. And I think that was when I was able to look at her and think, OK, this you're not awful, you're ill.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also developed much better coping mechanisms. But she still, you know, I can still feel that visceral surge of fear and that dread that would surge through me and take me right back to how I used to feel when I was, you know, 6 and 7 and 8. If she came through the door, if she came through my door and she went cooey, cooey, I knew we were going to have a good day.
Yeah, yeah.
If the door opened and there was silence, I would get that surge of dread. It's like, oh no, bad Brenda's arrived.
And I think what you're saying is, yeah, it's the unpredictability, because as people, as humans, as adults, as children, you're always looking for patterns. You're always looking for, like, oh, this makes them happy or this makes sense. And when someone is irrational, you know, when it comes to a mental illness, then there's no safety, is there? There's no, like, oh, if I do this, I'll be all right. And if I'm tidy, this will be all right. If I'm polite, it's like, there's no telling. So that makes you, you know, it's a cliche, but you're walking on eggshells all the time. And that, of course, that makes you hypervigilant. You know, your cortisol is raised all the time. Like, there's so many effects. And I really, this is the thing. It's no one's fault. Like you said, like, if someone has the mental illness, like, that's not their fault and they need lots of support. But the people around them, of course, to deny that
also
they're not affected.
Yeah.
you just, like you said, you need to know you're not the only one going through this, because otherwise it's very lonely. It's a really, really lonely place to be, and I really feel for you. That must have been such a difficult place to be as a child.
And I didn't have siblings.
I know, I was going to say, not to have someone either to look at and be like, oh, bloody hell, bad bender.
It really was a long, lone path that I was treading.
I'm very impressed that you, not impressed is the wrong word, but I'm very, that you managed to stay in good, in a good relationship with her. Like in the book, like you said, you know, I know you had your moments where you were sort of not talking to her, but you never, you know, a lot of other people might have been like, I don't talk to them. Like, they're dead to me because of what's happened. Like, you stayed very present in her life. And the love between you, that thing is so complicated, isn't it? It wasn't just,
Really loved her. Yeah. I really, really loved her.
That comes across in the book.
But I think that's because the good Brenda was so good.
Yeah.
I think if she hadn't been interesting.
Yeah.
And if she'd been a bore, I wouldn't have felt so compelled to, you know, remain in contact with her. But I did, I really, really loved her.
Yeah, and you didn't just stay, you know, it wasn't like, oh, I made sure they were okay. Like, they stayed with you. You know, you were very present in her life. And yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, with that, when a personality is split.
But I felt a responsibility towards her.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like she was my child. Mm. There's no doubt that those roles were completely reversed.
Yeah.
Like, if anything had ever happened to my dad, she would have had to have come and live with me.
Yeah.
And I would have had to have looked after her for the rest of her life. Because, you know, she didn't cook. She didn't know how to use the washing machine.
Yeah.
She couldn't drive. She didn't carry money. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah. And like you said, I think in the book where you said, like, you know, if it wasn't for you and your dad, how would she have existed?
But she wouldn't have survived. Yeah. She wouldn't have survived. I would give her a week and she'd have be dead.
Yeah.
Because she, it was extraordinary.
But also,
and that's all thanks to Jermaine Greer. She basically read the female eunuch and downed tools. That's what happened.
Do you ever want to, like, call Jermaine and be like, mate, I know you had a point, but in my household, it caused some other problems.
I mean, I will never forget the week, and I write about this in the book, but the week my dad went to hospital.
Yeah. I couldn't believe this, Emma. I was shocked.
It's true. Yeah. This is a true story, okay? I stood in the hallway and I had a PE bag over one shoulder, and I looked at her and I said, this is your big chance with me, do you understand? I mean, what 11-year-old turns to their mother and says that? Yeah. But that sentence in and of itself should show you exactly what I was going through. So I said, this is your big chance with me. Do you understand? And she went, yeah, okay, yeah. She, and I said, I'm not looking after you this week. Okay? And she went, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. I mean, this is just craziness. Yeah. And so I go off to school, and then the only time I ever cried at school happened because my French teacher said, okay, we're going to do a project and I need you to get your mums to get you a scrapbook. And my hand immediately shot up and I said, I'm not going to be able to do the project because my mum isn't going to be able to get a scrapbook. Because in my head, I thought, number one, she's not going to know what a scrapbook is. Number two, she's not going to know where to get one.
Yeah.
And number three, she can't possibly buy one. How can she do this? Yeah. It's just impossible. And my French teacher, the next day, she misinterpreted me and she thought I meant that we couldn't afford to get a scrapbook. And she gave me a scrapbook. She went and got me a scrapbook and gave it to me. And that's the only time I've ever cried at school.
Oh.
And it's just, but it's interesting. Kindness.
Mm.
Little acts of kindness just absolutely floor me, and they still do to this day because it's like that, it's so gratefully received, and I still think just a little act of kindness to anyone, you know, something you're doing for someone that requires nothing back,
yeah,
it's just such a beautiful thing. So kindness always makes me weep. But anyway, I went home. And she was so pleased with herself and she looked at like giddy thrilled. Yeah. And she said, would you like your first course? She was very confident about this. And I said, well, all right, yep. And she put a pot of cockles in front of me.
I forgot the
cockles. And we couldn't get the lid off. We couldn't get the lid off. So that was, forget it.
Starter's
gone. So what she did, and the main course was supposed to be rice and garlic, so at which point I just said, look, forget this, and I made sandwiches. But from then on, every single day, she got me to phone a friend, a different friend every day, and cry a bit down the phone and go, my dad's in the hospital, please can we come for tea? And then obviously they'd ask their mum, and their mum was, of course she can come for tea, poor thing. And my mother would be nudging me and going, and me, Emma, and me. And so I go, come on, mum, come too. And then obviously they can't say no. So we would go to a different friend's house every night and have supper while my father was in the hospital. And I would be mortified. And my mother would think this was the greatest wheeze she had ever managed to pull out of a bag.
Oh my God.
And I would do the washing up. I'd insist on do the washing up. And there was one evening and I turned to her and I said, are you going to help me, mum, do this washing up? Because she'd do nothing. And she looked at me and she said, Emma, I can't lift a pan. My womb will drop out. And she genuinely believed that.
I'm just speechless. I just don't know what to say.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
I mean, but it's extraordinary.
None of that was made up.
Because
a friend once found her walking around town in Hitchin, staring into the gutter. She was just staring into gutters and wandering around. And they said, what are you doing, Brenda? She said, I'm looking for money. I want to buy a paper. She was like the Queen. She didn't carry money.
Oh, my God. I just, for me, like, as a child of the 80s who went to friends' houses for tea all the time after school, for a mum not to do, like, would have been, like, just like, what? Like, what do you mean your mum can't? Because that was my, you know.
I once found her standing over a pan. This is the only time I can ever remember her attempting to cook something. Again, I think it was when Dad was in hospital. And she was standing over a pan and she was stirring it. And again, just looking like she'd won the pools. And I said, what are you cooking? And she said, broccoli. And I looked in and it was parsley.
I mean, she had good comic sensibilities. Oh my God. I mean, she is, it comes across in the book, she's an extraordinary character like that. And I think as well, I do think the gender's interesting because I said my dad was, you know, a bit of a character, but he was a man and it was always considered like, oh, he's a bit eccentric. And I think for a woman to behave like that must have been, again, really hard.
Yeah. And especially then.
Yeah, then. That's, I mean, what I mean, then.
I didn't have anybody who had the same family setup as I did.
Yeah.
Like, friends would come round and be astonished that my dad was doing the cooking.
Yeah, yeah.
Just astonished by it.
I know.
So that was another thing that I was having to deal with. That I didn't know anybody else who had the same sort of family arrangements that I did.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to forget, and it's not a good thing or a bad thing, it's just that's what the past was like. I didn't see any of my friends' dads. I never saw them. They were working. If you went round for tea, they were net like cooking. I never saw a man. My dad did no cooking, did nothing at all. Like, you forget how the past is. It was not that long ago that was an extraordinary thing that she was not refusing to fulfill that role. And sort of good on her for refusing to fulfill that role. But then passing it to your daughter
She did try to learn to drive once. But again, this tells you everything you need to know about her. She failed on emergency stops because the instructor said, okay, right, we're going to do the emergency stop now. And then he, you know, slammed his hand on the dashboard and she ignored it. And so, silence. And he did it again. She ignored it. And he turned to her and he said, we're doing the emergency stop. She said, I know, but I can't stop here. I'm on a hill. and then, you know, looked at him as if he was the mad
yeah,
one.
Yeah, like, what is wrong
like,
with this man?
What's she doing?
Oh my God.
So that you know, that was her. She had no regard for authority. Mm. In fact, if she ever came across anyone in authority, it was sort of her natural instinct to dislike them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's quite tricky growing up with that. Did you pick that up? Because my dad had that, no. And we picked it up really badly, and it did not work out for us in the real world.
If anything, I've gone the other way.
Gone the other way. I think that's sensible.
If anything, I love rules.
Oh.
I love rules. I love regulations. In fact, just recently watching the pageant, I turned to my wife and I said, "Do you know what? I would have done very well in the armed forces." And she was quite surprised by that, but I absolutely would have loved to be in the armed forces. I would have loved the rules.
Yeah.
I would have loved being told what to do. I would have loved the regimentation of it, because, of course, I had nothing like that.
You can relax.
When I was a child.
None of the chaos.
It was like, I suppose, you know, on one level, I had extraordinary latitude to do what I wanted. So there was that. You know, in my room, the rule was I had to keep the rest of the house. I wasn't allowed to make a mess in the rest of the house, but I could do what I wanted in my bedroom. I could paint on the walls.
Wow.
I could paint on the carpets. I could do what I wanted. So it was like, you know, that was great. But there was also sort of no sense of, there were no boundaries, really.
Yeah.
And so what was interesting was that I gave myself those boundaries.
Yeah, because kids want them. Kids, it's not that they don't want them, they want them.
I applied rules to myself.
Yeah.
And I suppose, actually, that's one thing to thank her for, because I've just got an extraordinary work ethic now. And I did then, when I was a child, it was like I loved going to school and I loved doing my homework. And I think that was because school gave me boundaries, and school gave me rules, and school gave me regulations, and school was the place where I felt safe.
Yeah, that's the thing with kids and boundaries, as you know, you learn pretty quickly as a parent that they actually do want them. Otherwise they're not very happy. How do you obviously, like you said, after she died, that extraordinary silence that comes when an extraordinary character is not there, like, how has the writing been the process that you've sort of pieced your grief back together?
Yes, absolutely. As soon as I got the letters, really, I always knew that I was going to have to write about them.
Mm.
And letters from Brenda, and I've never had this experience before in my entire career. I've never felt that I had to write something.
Yeah.
That I had to get something out of me.
Yeah.
And that is what Letters from Brenda is. And I'm so grateful to the book, because I finally got the answer that I was been asking myself for, you know, over 50 years.
Yeah.
This is a blunt tool of a question, but what was wrong with Brenda?
Yeah. Yeah.
And a great thing happened when I'd finished the first draft and it had gone off to my editor. And obviously I'm not a clinical psychologist, so but the first draft was me sort of trying to come to some form of answer, and I sort of think, well, you know, I've got the closest I'm ever going to get to something. And we sent it off to a clinical psychiatrist just to make sure that I hadn't written anything that was wrong or irresponsible.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, there will be people who will be reading the book who either have got a mental illness or living with someone with a mental illness, and you have to be really careful about these things.
Yeah, yeah.
And the clinical psychiatrist, really all that was being asked of him was just to check the book and make sure that I hadn't got anything badly wrong. And he wrote me this extraordinary letter. And I asked, and it was so extraordinary, I asked him if we could put it in the book, and it now appears as the epilogue. Mm. But he basically diagnoses her. And that was a revelation to me. And at that point, everything fell into place, because it was, okay, we really didn't imagine it. And number two, it's quite shocking how serious the illness that she had was.
Mm.
And the thought that she had spent her life with that illness, undiagnosed and unmedicated,
mm.
is just really shocking.
Mm. I think, so you felt like you got the validation that you weren't imagining it or making it up, because I guess your whole childhood had been like diminishing it, like, it's fine, it's normal, don't worry yeah, about it.
But you know what, it's also really important that I'm just so desperate to hold on to the good, Brenda.
Yeah
and it's so important to me to not think of Brenda as bad Brenda, but as mad Brenda.
Yeah,
which might seem weird to people listening, but there's such a distinction in terms of my emotional strength and my emotional well-being is that I can look back and think, okay, you know, you didn't waste all that love on somebody who was a bad person. You gave all of that love to somebody who was really unwell.
Emma, that's a really beautiful way to hold your grief.
Yeah.
Because it is really, really hard when somebody has not delivered on all the parent tick boxes that you needed. So I think, yeah, to be able to give her that grace and understanding is really... it's really important, and also, like you said, gives your grief space to evolve, because otherwise you are slightly stuck in that, well, they did this to me, and why, and you know, and all the anger and all the that stuff, you get sort of stuck in that room.
Yeah.
And for grief, you know, it doesn't disappear, but it needs to evolve with you. That's, I think, the only way you can sort of not feel awful every day.
Mm. It's interesting, you know, since finishing the book, I've had a feeling that I haven't had for a very, 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 very long time. And that's, do you know what? If someone could give me a wish right now, it would be I'd go and hang out with her.
Oh.
I would flipping love to hang out with my mother again. I really miss the energy of her.
Mm. It's hard that you... I sort of feel like somebody sometimes needs to be dead for you to reach that place of understanding with them. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like they kind of need...
Oh, she was exhausting.
Yeah, and she, you know, need like no a proper break to stand back from them and have like years away from them. And then you can see them like a sort of eagle eye view of everything that they are and what happened. And then you can go, oh, I get it. It wasn't,
My life is so different.
Yeah.
Without her in it. Yeah. It is peaceful. It is calm.
Yeah.
You know, my life is my own.
Mm.
And it wasn't, you know, it didn't matter where I was, what I was doing. If she was kicking off, she would let me know about it wherever I was in the world. And I would then be intricately involved in the untangling of it from wherever I was until it concluded.
Mm.
And that would happen all the time. So there are elements of her in my life that I really don't miss at all. Mm. But I suppose it is important that I remember that chaos.
Yeah.
So that I'm not sort of romanticising who she was in my life on a daily basis. Mm. But I would love to hang out with her, you know. And have a long, really long, laugh-filled conversation with her.
She really did sound like the most extraordinary person.
Yeah, she. If you met her, she was a once-met, never-forgotten person. That's what she was.
Yeah, yeah. And that is, you know, it's like standing next to fire, isn't it? It's like, it's amazing, it's very warm. Sometimes it's too hot, but it's also an extraordinary thing to be next to. Emma, thank you so much for talking to me about Brenda. Like, what a legend. She really does sound extraordinary for all her ups and downs and brilliance and terrible things that she had to deal with and you had to endure as well. the book is brilliant and you get even more of a sense of her adventures. And your poor dad, your poor, we should raise a glass to your dad.
Hats off to Tony.
Tony.
What a saint.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a saint he has been. Yeah.
Like I feel like he definitely needs a small memorial plaque.
Yeah.
Eventually raised for what he did. But yeah, thank you so much. It was really wonderful to remember her.
My pleasure.
You can buy Emma's book, Letters from Bender, now, and all her other books are available to buy as well. You can follow her on Twitter at Emma Kennedy. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was recorded remotely. It was edited by Kate Holland. The music was provided by The Glue Ensemble. Artwork by Jade Perkin. Stop motion animation by Alice Loveday. And remember, you are not alone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.